Naturally, the inhabitants of the Lesser Antilles were not fighting for the best interest of the Cuban people, but their sacrifices did allow us the luxury of setting our own terms. Any seeking sanctuary would find themselves greeted with a saying so common among Norte Americano parents, "Well, under my roof, you will obey my rules." Not all of the refugees were Yankees. We had our share from mainland Latin America, from Africa, Western Europe, Spain especially. Many Spaniards and Canadians had visited Cuba either on business or holiday. I had gotten to know a few of them before the war. Nice people, polite, so different from the East Germans of my youth, who used to toss handfuls of candy in the air and laugh while we children scrambled for it like rats. The majority of our boat people, however, originated from the United States. Every day, more would arrive by large ship or private craft, even on homemade rafts that brought an ironic smile to our faces. So many of them, a total of 5 million, equal to almost half of our indigenous population, and along with all the other nationalities, they were placed under the jurisdiction of the government's quarantine resettlement program. I would not go so far as to call the resettlement centers prison camps. They could not compare to the lives suffered by our political dissidents, the writers and teachers. I had a friend who was accused of being a homosexual. His stories from prison cannot compare to even the harshest resettlement center. It was not easy living, however. These people, no matter what their pre-war occupation or status, were initially put to work as field hands, 12 to 14 hours a day growing vegetables in what had once been our state-run sugar plantations. At least the climate was on their side. The temperature was dropping, the skies were darkening, Mother Nature was kind to them. The guards, however, were not.
"Be glad you're alive," they shout after each slap or kick. "Keep complaining, and we throw you to the zombies."
Every camp had a rumor about the dreaded zombie pits, the hole in which they throw the troublemakers. The DGI, the General Intelligence Directorate, had even planted prisoners in the general population to spread stories about how they personally witnessed men being lowered headfirst into the boiling lake of ghouls. This was all just to keep everyone in line, you see. None of it was actually true. Though, there were stories about the Miami whites. The majority of American Cubanos were welcomed home with open arms. I myself had several relatives living in Daytona who just barely escaped with their lives. The tears of so many reunions in those early frantic days could have filled the Caribbean Sea. But that first wave of post-revolution immigrants, the affluent elite who had flourished under the old regime and who spent the rest of their lives trying to topple everything we worked so hard to build, as far as those aristos were concerned, I am not saying there's any proof that they were thrown to the ghouls by their fat, reactionary, Bacardi Blanca drinking asses, but if they were, they can suck Batista's balls in hell.
A thin, satisfied smile crosses his lips.
Of course, we couldn't have actually attempted this kind of punishment with your people. Rumors and threats were one thing, but physical action, push your people, any people, too far, and you risk the possibility of a revolt. 5 million Yankees all rising in open revolution. Unthinkable. It already took too many troops to maintain the camps. And that was the initial success of the Yankee invasion of Cuba.